Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Live out here at SEC Media Days, Day 2, at the Grand Hyatt, downtown Nashville. Our 102.5 and 106.3 The Game SEC Media coverage is brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Mercedes-Benz of Music City. And we'll get to our SEC thoughts, but now it is time to talk D-Hop. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us now. Tim, appreciate you for joining us. The Titans have signed D-Hop, and I could hear a big sigh of relief throughout this entire city. What do you make of the sign? The two-year deal and the $26 million.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the deal is probably a little bit more than I was guessing, you know, based on what it seemed like the market was for him. You know, to be honest about it, I think that I think that a lot of people believe that, you know, from a player perspective, Tennessee was going to be, you know, a good fit just in terms of walking in, probably being the true number one right when you walk in. And I think for that probably ends up being appealing. It's probably why the money from Tennessee, you know, appeared to be better than it was elsewhere. I think I said to you guys in the past, I would not have been in any hurry if I were Hopkins, because I just, you know, with injuries and things of that nature, things will change. I think it helps the Titans, but do I feel like it is something that is a complete game changer? I don't. You know, I think when you look at the interest around the league, I think that is telling you what the league thinks of him as a player, or where he is at this stage of his career. And so does it help their receiving core? Sure. But I think that speaks more about the state of the receiving core, you know, more so than what Hopkins can bring now.
Yeah, what do you think that DeAndre Hopkins can be versus what the Titans really need him to be?
Well, look, I think at his, like, what can he be? I mean, he can be their number one receiver. I mean, I think that, I guess I would start there. But is he going to catch, you know, over 100 balls? I don't believe so. And I think that's the tricky part when you start talking about a receiver like Hopkins, who's been, you know, he's been amazing, you know, at certain points in his career. I was like looking at it, I mean, he has four seasons where he's caught over 100 balls. But, you know, he's, you know, coming off of two seasons, again, injury and suspension. He's in his 30s. You know, I think that, you know, the expectation that, hey, he's going to come in and, you know, easily have over 100 targets and, you know, catch, you know, 90 to 100 balls, I think is probably, I don't want to say it's unrealistic. I guess it could happen, but I think it's more unlikely than likely that that's what happens with
him. We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Do you think, Tim, that, you know, at the end of the day, this was a signing that the Titans needed, that, you know, they couldn't allow D-Hop to be signed by another team? And I'm saying that because, you know, to me, they were competing with themselves in regards to, you know, how much money they were going to give them. I don't think any other team was going to be willing to go that high. But it was almost like they had to do it. They had no choice but to sign D-Hop.
I think that's how they felt, which is why I think the money, you know, surprised me in terms of how much it was and then how much, and then he can kind of earn on top of that with production. Look, I think that it's fair to say prior to him being signed, Treylon Burks, who's coming off of, you know, a rookie year where there was, you know, I don't think there was some good and some bad. After that, you get to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who's probably played the next most snaps. And then at that point, it was a really, really unproven group. I mean, that's the reality of it. And so I think that, yeah, they probably felt like they had to address the position. Look, I think in some ways, you know, with A.J. Brown, it went from a position of a group of strength to a group where, you know, they're not as good as the rest of the league. So, yeah, I think they probably felt that they had to do something there. And I would just say this, and D-Mace, you know a lot about this, having played the position, being in a receiver room, and being in a receiver room where there are younger players. I do think that when you sign a guy that's in his 30s, that's playing the position, if he is not a guy that is like a worker and a lead by example guy in practice, that can ultimately in the long run end up being bad for your receiver group, right? Like, I think if you're going to add somebody, it better be somebody when the younger guys look around and go, man, can you believe he's still finishing every drill like that at this stage of his career, at his age? Like, I think it needs to be that type of player. And so I would have a little bit of concern about that as well.
And that's what I was going to say, Tim, because right before we had you on, we had the great John McClain on. And John has been, you know, covering him basically his whole career, or really his whole career there in Houston. And John did bring up, you know, hey, if you're looking for a guy that is going to, you know, give it their all in practice, is going to work hard in practice, then you're barking up the wrong tree, because D-Hop isn't that guy. Which leads me to, I come from the school of thought, like, listen, practice to me meant a lot. Even when I didn't want to practice, I still went out there and I still bust my tail to practice, because I knew younger guys were watching me. But that's how I was anyway, whether it be college, high school, yeah, or the pros. I always put a high premium on practice.
Well, listen, my brother was in Seattle and they signed Jerry Rice. And look, it wasn't just the receivers. Like, I remember talking to my brother. I remember asking him, calling him, and being like, hey, so, like, what? Tell me what it's like. And he's like, dude, he stayed after. Like, we had, like, guys in their second year leave practice, like, you know, practice is over, leave. Like, he went and caught some, he was catching balls on the jugs after practice, and then he was working on a couple of different things. It was so much so that Holmgren said to the team, like went and grabbed some guys. It was like, look, like, watch him for a second. Like, this is at a time, like, many people believed he was not just the best receiver of all time, but, like, the best football player of all time. And it was like, hey, this guy's 40. He's 41 years old, okay? And you're leaving the practice field before him. Like, wait a minute. That was part of why they wanted him there. And so, you know, because at the time, they had some young receivers that quite honestly weren't trending in the right direction that they were trying to get to improve. You know, it was Corn Robinson and Daryl Jackson, guys like that. And so, yeah, I think that that's important, and I don't believe that's what you're getting. And I think, you know, John McClain obviously is, you know, kind of said similar.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, we'll turn the page and look at the running back situation and the market in our next segment. I got one more for you, though, before we go to the break on D-Hop. This is something we've talked to you a lot in the past about, and that is another, I think I would categorize it, potential pitfall, right? A guy has been targeted. I don't know how he compares to Julio Jones, but it's got to be pretty close, right? Even last year, targets per game, he was fourth in the league, over 10 per game in a year where he only got 9 games in there, and some of those games were with, you know, some scrub QBs throwing to him, right? So they were still trying to get him the ball. So that may not be the case with the Titans. I'm curious about that part of it.
Well, look, I brought it up, and I think I told you guys at the time. At the time Julio Jones came to Tennessee, he had been, in the history of the NFL, on a per-game basis, the most targeted receiver in the history of the game. And, you know, part of what I was wondering is, I'm like, hey, how does that work when you get 3 balls thrown your direction in a game and you catch one of them? And look, just to be candid, like, you're dealing with the same type of adjustment now. Like, you have a first round receiver in Treylon Burks. Like, you need him to develop. He cannot be a 2-target a game guy, because he really, over the next 3 years, is the future of the position in terms of the guy that should be getting the lion's share of targets. So you can't, in my estimation, continue to target Hopkins the way he has been throughout his career, because what it will do is it's just going to limit the opportunities to a guy that you need to, you know, turn into, as people, you know, said, it was, he's coming down the grass, the next A.J. Brown. So, like, there has to be an adjustment there. There has to be an understanding that that's going to happen. And I think unless you're willing to accept that, you're just going to ultimately have an unhappy player.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Hey, the Game Summer Ticket Tour is headed to Bringle Smoking Oasis, located at 4901 Centennial Boulevard in Nashville, this Friday afternoon from 2 to 6. Come eat, drink, hang, and leave with a pair of free sounds, preds, Big Machine Music City, and pre- or concert tickets. Also get signed up for the grand prize, Titans tickets, preds tickets in the 501 Club, and a two-night stay at Opryland Hotel with access to sound waves. Black Tie Moving delivers the Game Summer Ticket Tour. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/tour. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I'm bringing Hassel back. Caroline, Willie, G-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us now.
Tim, you know, we've talked to you about this theme that's been building now for, I don't know, several years, but there was some really new level stuff with the running backs, with the Dalvin Cook. Now you have this whole thing about the franchise tag. I don't know that I've ever seen so many running backs. I wonder if there was any coordination, but I saw four or five different running backs go on the record, kind of throwing their, putting their foot down and saying, this is enough. You know, we're important players. Why aren't we getting treated better in terms of the market?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately, and I'm going to say this, they're upset because they're not being compensated more. And it's not like they're not getting compensated like in an individual year, but they're not getting compensated in terms of their level of impact, you know, on a, call it a long-term deal, a 3-5 year deal. And so with that, like, their guaranteed money isn't there. But in saying that and understanding the frustration for it, like, I think you also have to kind of, like, you got to understand the nature of the position a little bit. And so, like, I feel for these guys, too. I like when players get paid. I think it's great. I think it's an amazing opportunity for, you know, guys to play a sport and in some cases make, like, generational money. But, you know, there were times for me when I would hear people complain about, like, well, hey, the quarterbacks are making too much money. Like, there is an element inside me that was like, well, then learn how to throw. You know what I mean? Like if you have a problem with it, then do that. Or listen, learn how to sack a quarterback. Like, learn how to cover somebody. So there's part of it for me where, like, you know, you can't, as the game changes, like, look, there was a point where fullbacks, you know, were kind of getting treated like tight ends. And then what people realized was it was like, look, they don't last real long. And we can kind of find someone else way cheaper to do something similar. And so fullbacks just started making, you know, way less money. I think what's going on with running back is because the lifespan generally is what it is, teams are saying, like, look, Saquon Barkley's awesome. No one would dispute that. But he got a torn ACL. He's not getting younger. Is he going to fall off the cliff like Le'Veon Bell or Sean Alexander or guys like that? And the answer more often than not is yes.
So what do you do now if you're the Giants or the Raiders and you've got this situation where
Dallas as well?
Dallas is in this boat as well. Mm-hmm. So what happens now? Because now you get into this waiting game. It's almost like a Le'Veon Bell 2.0, right, potentially.
Yeah. Well, look, I think what you do is, look, this idea, and I think Le'Veon Bell was actually on the record this week kind of talking about, you know, when he sat out that season. You don't get that money back. Like, I mean, that was a horrible business decision. Like, whoever was advising him and, like, was kind of co-signing that decision with him, assuming that there was somebody doing it, he'll never get that money back. I mean, he probably cost himself about $15 million that he'll never make. So, like, these guys can talk about sitting out, but the reality is with the new collective bargaining agreement, you've been franchise tagged. You don't really have any leverage to do it, and it is financially painful for you to do. So what do? I actually think if you're the Giants or the Raiders or any of these teams, look, you understand the guy's going to be unhappy, but they're going to be making, over $10 million this year. I think there's a very public, kind of argument that you can win when it's like, look, guy's making, over $10 million this season to play football, like show up and play. And I think then you just deal with addressing the position when that guy leaves after the season. I mean, I think, and oh, by the way, if the franchise number is not going way, way up, tag him again.
And Tim, that's the thing that I think hurts running back more than anybody else. When you're talking about the positions that impact a game, whether it be a receiver, quarterback, edge rusher, because their average money is a lot higher than the running back's average money. And teams can, franchise tag them in multiple years. I think eventually the NFL's, the PA is going to have to do something about that in regards to how many times can you tag an individual with the franchise tag. Because, like you said, these running backs, teams are just going to say, instead of playing a long-term deal, I can just tag you for the next 2 years and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and look, it's been agreed upon. Like, that's that, and the NFLPA is not going to, take, four running backs and say, hey, like, oh my gosh, like, I need to, we need to change all of this just for this position. Let me just give you like a couple of these examples. You understand of like why people feel the way they feel. Sean Alexander, okay, played 9 years in the NFL. He rushed for 27 touchdowns in 2005. I think he was a league MVP that year. 27 touchdowns, okay? He had 370 rushes that season, okay? Well, the next season he had 252 attempts, played in 10 games, rushed for 7 touchdowns. The very next year he rushed for 4 touchdowns, and the year following that he rushed for 0. Like, it is, like, it's not a slow burn at the position. LaDainian Tomlinson, guys, like, he's a guy who, he rushed for 28 touchdowns in 2006. The following year, okay? And he was just 27 years old at the time. But from the time that he turned 30, he never had another 1,000-yard season. He had 1 year we had double-digit touchdowns. And once he turned 30, he was done playing football after 32. Like, you don't last long. And, the difference between LaDainian Tomlinson, at 29 or whatever it is, and signing Zonovan Knight as a fifth round draft pick or whatever and getting what you can get out of him is not that different. And in some cases you can argue that the younger guy would be better. Look back to Philip Lindsay. Remember when he had that amazing year as an undrafted free agent for the Denver Broncos? Like, it's short-lived. It's just one of those things where, look, you're just choosing to play a position that doesn't get a second contract. Very rarely does it happen. And by the way, like, you better be like McCaffrey or Kamara and be really good in the passing game, because otherwise they really don't need you.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, we are at SEC Media Day, so I wanted to throw one quick college question at you. A big part of Greg Sankey's, for lack of a better word, filibuster yesterday was on NIL and how there needs to be federal involvement in NIL and standardizing NIL laws across the country, not state by state. Do you think that's possible? And is that the right approach to, let's say, putting the toothpaste back into the tube?
Well, I would say this. What he's saying about it being different state to state is a massive problem, because what what that does is it allows some schools to be heavily involved in assisting guys getting NIL deals, right? And they can be both good and bad, but the school can be very involved in helping. And I know some schools that are exactly that way. Then there are other states where the schools cannot be involved at all. Like they really can't. And so what's happening is somebody outside the school, an alum, someone that has a passion for the university, is kind of heading it up so the schools can do it. So now it's something that's like completely out of the jurisdiction of an athletic department at a university. And look, in some ways that can be good, but in some ways that can be really, really bad. And so when you have schools kind of competing on a different playing field with that, that ultimately is a problem. And look, I think it's clear that the NIL has turned into not what it was intended to do. But I also think in this country, if people are willing to pay guys, in some cases literally to do nothing, I don't know how you take that away from them. And so in terms of some of the oversight with it, you know, I don't know how that happens. But I will say this, just even from a player perspective of the guys getting paid, you know, there does need to be let me back up. I think there's going to start to be some issues, and we've already seen some, where people are promised, you know, a payment on something and don't get it. Where is the help, you know, for those guys to actually get paid what they've been told they were paid? There are so many issues with it, and it's not just, you know, Greg Sankey that's got to deal with it. It's, you know, the entire, you know, every conference and, you know, all of the NCAA. But, I do think that you got to start streamlining it. The other thing, Caroline, quite honestly, it's got to be policed a little bit. Like, it's not being policed at all right now. And, you know, the fact that there basically have been no violations associated with it should probably go to tell you that, like, I mean, it is the wild, wild west.
Absolutely it is. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat next week.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Yep. Coming up next, Paul Feinbaum of the SEC will join us. I want to get his thoughts on NIL as well, plus what we've heard throughout SEC Media Day so far this week. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.